So when we look at outcomes, students, and this has been shown sadly over and over and over in research studies, that students who are students of color are predetermined to be marginalized historically and present day and excluded by public school systems. And what happens is our students, especially our students of color in our district, we have to have ways to mitigate and address the gaps that are already there when we even begin to serve our students as young as preschool. And so our job is to eliminate that gap. And how we do that is to talk about our reality, to talk about the multiple measures of our data, to have those honest, frank conversations, and to really give and provide every employee in our district the necessary professional learning of how do we respond to our current reality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Brenda Lewis. Brenda is the superintendent at Fridley Schools, Fridley Public Schools in Fridley, Minnesota. Brenda, it is a pleasure to have you here today.
It is so nice to be with you, Janet. Thanks for the honor of being able to be on your podcast. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to hear what you have to say. We talked a little bit before, and I'm excited to have this conversation. So tell everybody a little bit about what's going on in your world and your career. It sounds really interesting.
Well, thank you so much for that. So I'm in my third year now with Fridley Public Schools. Fridley Public Schools is a locationally suburban school system. We're very near Minneapolis. We are a school district of approximately 2,800 students. And I say locationally suburban because our student demographics may not be what you would think of when I say the term suburban school district. So our district is 80% and pretty rapidly rising students of color, and 72% and very rapidly rising students living in poverty. And when I talk about 80% students of color, when we really look at that from a demographic standpoint, we're about 42% of our students are Black, about 25% of our students are Hispanic Latino, about 11% of our students are two or more race, about 7% or so are Asian, and about 20% of our students are white. And that looks very different than it did 10 years ago in our district. And in the state of Minnesota, we have something called open enrollment, where families can choose public schools to attend that are outside of their attendance areas. And so our district is fortunate that we're what you would call an open enrollment winner, where we have more students choose us through open enrollment than more resident students who leave us through open enrollment. So we're about 43% students who are open enrolled into our district, one of the highest percents in Minnesota. Yeah. And we're also a part of Northwest Suburban Integration School District, which is seven school districts in the state of Minnesota that really are grounded in access and opportunity and equity for students. So our students can choose from our seven member districts, and then they get transportation to magnet schools within that consortium. And we are district-wide pre-K through 12th grade international baccalaureate. And our IB program is the only pre-K through 12 magnet or IB program in the state of Minnesota, and we're one of 13 in the nation. So that makes us pretty special. I'm also a parent here of three students, and Fridley, two are at the high school and one is at the middle school. So I get to have that dual role. And career-wise, this is my first superintendency, and I've had the absolute honor of serving in multiple districts that have really prepared me through different roles to be here in Fridley Public Schools and just leading in the way that I have been. And I've been in roles from assistant superintendent to teaching and learning, principal, assistant principal. And I also was a principal abroad for 1 year in China. So had a lot of different experiences that have really shaped me to being a superintendent here in Fridley.
Yeah. And when it comes to superintendents, you're a minority because there are more male superintendents than there are female superintendents, for sure.
100%. And that's an interesting place to be, too. In the state of Minnesota, we have approximately 17% of the superintendents in the state are female. So you often think of education as a heavy female dominated profession. But when you move into even cabinet level positions, and especially the superintendency, it's definitely a male dominated profession.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't pretend to figure out why that happens, but you know, it definitely is. The numbers don't lie, for sure.
Well, and I feel, too, my job as a female superintendent is really to empower the leaders and future leaders that I am honored to serve in my district and in education, and really boost them on my shoulders to get them to their next seat. And that's really about, whether it's in our district or in another district, that's really my responsibility to ensure that we have the next generation of leaders.
Yeah. And that's education too, right? Yeah. I mean, we are. And with the demographics that you have, what an opportunity to give equity, give them the opportunity. Yeah. And how is that working? How's it going there?
Sure. So I have really grounded equity in my entire career as a teacher, paraprofessional, and now as a superintendent. And this is year 26 for me. And equity is the way that I go about the work. It's my foundation. I'm married to an immigrant from Nigeria, and together we have three children, and we're very proud of our Igbo Nigerian American family. And I think that also is a huge component to why that's just how I do the work, both during my workday as well as in my life. The equity work certainly requires stamina. I would say that obviously I'm in a position of privilege to lead that work as a white female. Mm-hmm. And it's very different for me to lead that work than we would see a colleague of color. Mm-hmm. With that being said, it's not about popularity. And there are certainly times when the equity work, you really have to stay in it and ground yourself, because especially now in our nation, it is not a popular time to lead the equity work. However, I do not believe there is any more important time than now. And it's rightness, and it's the right thing to do. And I am absolutely honored and privileged and empowered by the school board that I have here in Fridley. Our school board has not only been amazing with the work, they have championed it as well. And I believe that's why they chose me as their superintendent. And honestly, why I chose them is when a superintendent and a school board align in the manner that we do, which is frankly pretty rare, especially around the equity work, especially in these times, it's unmatched. And Fridley Public Schools also is really championing that work across the metro area here in Minnesota, and really is a leader in that across the state. So I'm just honored that I have a board that is so empowering to me to lead that work.
Awesome. Awesome. So how does it affect like outcomes for you guys? What does that look like when you talk about outcomes related to all of that?
So I always ground everything in race. So the first question that we really ask is, how does race impact this, right? And as a reminder, 80% students of color, that's an expectation in our district. So when we look at outcomes, students, and this has been shown sadly over and over and over in research studies, that students who are students of color are predetermined to be marginalized historically and present day and excluded by public school systems. And what happens is our students, especially our students of color in our district, we have to have ways to mitigate and address the gaps that are already glaringly there when we even begin to serve our students as young as preschool. And so our job is to eliminate that gap. And how we do that is to talk about our reality, to talk about the multiple measures of our data, to have those honest, frank conversations, and to really give and provide every employee in our district the necessary professional learning of how do we respond to our current reality. And there is going to be a time where instead of us chasing the opportunity gap, we are no longer chasing it. And instead of closing, it's about continuing the work. But right now, in my district and in many districts, we are still working on unacceptable and very significant gaps based on race. And there's also gaps based on economics.
Yeah. It's not. And I'm a white woman as well. You know, I mean, it's just, I've experienced my own form because I am a woman and I own a business and yet I still strive and we still fight and we still, you know, if you want something in this world, you got to chase it. Right. And you have to chase and take the opportunities, make sure that you're giving these children an opportunity, which they need. And And then do something with it, make something better. You know, I love it when you see somebody who's taken an opportunity and used it and become something that because they overcame the difficulties of not being equitable and not having, it's just really, it's empowering to see, and I love the fact that it's important to you and it's important to the kids that you're working with, and because you don't always know and you don't always see it. And I took a course, and I don't, professional development courses, when you're at my level, sometimes are like, I just have to get through these, right? I just need to take this course and it was implicit bias, and it was eye opening to me. Just the amount of, I have my own just bias because of where I live and who I am and what, you know, we all do. And how do you overcome that? What do you tell people when you, that's a great question for you. Cause it's like, how do I overcome my own implicit bias? How do we make it better so that we have a more level playing field?
I have had that outstanding privilege of being a part of professional learning by many equity warriors throughout my career. I've worked in districts that have championed the equity work and the anti-racist work. And one of those individuals is Dr. Shiraki Hawley. And I have been extensively benefited from his professional learning. And he always talks about first thought, second thought. And that has been something that is so crucial in how we talk about bias. And I talk to staff that, just as you said, Janet, we all have bias. And Dr. Hawley really works on first thought, second thought. And what that means is your first thought likely will have bias. Mm-hmm. And then you train yourself to move to your second thought. Mm-hmm. Right. And this shows up differently. And we are to the point in our district where I will literally hear staff say to one another, can you move to your second thought? And that's the cue. It's not saying, I vehemently disagree with you. It's just saying, Janet, can we move to your second thought?
Right.
And as a superintendent of the district here that I serve, as well as a mother and a wife of a Black male, I still need to move myself to my second thought. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I have been together for 20 years. So it's not that I or anyone is free of bias. It's about how do we move to our second thought? And we recognize that in our conscience.
And that was actually part of that work that you just quoted. That was exactly what they were teaching when I was doing this implicit bias, was that very study. And it was like, yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You just have to, go, you know. And as, and I said at the beginning, I'm a Christian and I don't deny it. You know, it's out there. It's out there. Everybody knows it. I don't hide it, anything. And one of the things that I love about my faith is Jesus was very clear. Love God, love others. That is what we are called to do as human beings and as Christians. And unfortunately, you know, we're humans first, you know, we're humans before we're Christians. We don't always get it right. But it is something that I think helps me as a Christian to go where I have to love you because God called me to love you. And it's not a have to. It's a work. You want to. But it's hard sometimes when you don't understand and you don't get where someone else is coming from. So helping and stopping and going and saying, okay, this person and I don't agree, and we may never agree, and that's okay. But that doesn't mean that I hate you or that I don't want to work with you or that I don't want what's best for you. Help me to work with you so that we can work together, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's that second thought. I think that's part of what you're talking about there. So.
Well, and I think to deepen the question that you had there for me also, it's those of us that lead the equity work in school systems or organizations, it's also a lot about approach. And I think there's so many different ways to approach it. I have found in education that when you lead with the data and you talk about 83% of our students are not reading on grade level, none of us want that.
Right.
None of us are proud of that. Yeah. And when we look at it by student groups, racially, economically, students served on an IEP, students who are multilingual learners, when we delineate down to that, it's something that as an educator, it does and it must bother your conscience, right? Mm-hmm. And so I talk about the equity or the data, I lead with that and the equity work, and also just working on what are our strategies. And also, similar to let's move to your second thought, I also talk about choose your hard. And in education, we are not conflict free. I don't think in any field you are. And sometimes these discussions are conflict ridden. However, I talk about let's choose your hard. Mm-hmm. How many students are you comfortable failing? Is it 60? Is it 80? Because let's have that discussion. And that really hits home in a way that kind of wakes you up about, whoo, how many students am I really comfortable failing?
There is a crisis in this country, a massive shortage of special education teachers. We know how devastating this can be for your students, families, and staff. Lighthouse Therapy places experienced special education teachers in virtual, hybrid, and on-site roles, and we handle everything from hiring to onboarding to mentorship. These aren't just placements, they're professionals who understand compliance, collaboration, and care. Let us help you fill in the gaps with special education teachers who really understand. We are here to help. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together. To connect with us today.
Right, right. So I'm going to ask a controversial question because I know it's out there and I know people are thinking it. So what do you say to your critics who say equity is reverse discrimination? What do you say to them?
I simply talk about the data. Here's the reality in our school system. Here's the reality in most school systems in Minnesota and most school systems across the nation. And our job as educators is to ensure that every student is successful and hold ourselves accountable for that. And we are literally responsible for the trajectory of our students. And honestly, Janet, I don't get into the discussion beyond that. I just talk about the data and our responsibility as educators. So much of this becomes politicized, and I don't enter into those battles. I just simply state, here's the reality in my school system. And I know just as I find this unacceptable, I know that you probably see it as very shocking. And I know you find it equally unacceptable. So when you come across with the data to show that in our school system, just like, sadly, most of America, if you racially identify as Black and brown, you are going to be predetermined to have a very different academic outcome than you would see for students who are not students of color. And I just enter into it through the data. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that is exactly what needs to happen. Let's talk about making sure that kids get educated, that they get the opportunities, that they get an education, because what we're doing in education is promoting and teaching the next generation. And how important is it that we see and they see that they matter? Every child matters, and that's something that Lighthouse says all the time. We never talk about finances and what's most important. We talk about how many students did we serve this year. And I never talk about how many of those were Black and how many of those were white and how many of those were Asian and how many were, you know, English language learners, et cetera, et cetera. How many kids did we make a difference in their life? Because I don't have to deal with the equity piece of it like you do. But every single child matters. And that's the part that when we get into the politics of it, or somebody takes me into the politics of it a little bit, and this is a very politicized, you and I both know, this is a very politicized topic. Both sides of the aisle want what's best for students. And that is the piece. How do we come together and make life better for the kids? Ooh, that gives me chills, because that's what matters. That's what really matters. And that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing, right?
And to your point, there's just similar to other states, funding public schools is complicated, right?
Yeah. and broken.
Yes. And it has a lot to do with property taxes, values at the local level, right? And we have some equalization formulas in Minnesota. They need to be updated. And districts such as mine have a depressed tax base. So that causes for funding discrepancies. And the board chair and I had the absolute pleasure of testifying on these matters. Multiple times this year. And to be very honest with you, while potentially this might surprise you, we actually had significant Republican backing on this. To your point, I always talk to our school board, I talk to stakeholders, and I say, my job is not partisan, but it's highly political. Yeah. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference. And I agree with you. When we have these logical conversations that are grounded in the data, it makes sense to most people.
And you're not the first person to bring that up on my podcast, that Minnesota has an issue, a big issue with how they disperse their money, and how it's really not fair, and it needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed. And honestly, I've said myself, why in the world do we do it from tax rolls? You know, I mean, you're already setting up schools for failure when you do that, because $1 million house is going to have a higher tax than a $50,000 house. That's the reality of it. And when you put all those $1 million houses in the same place, because that's where they are, because they're on the water or they're in the rich neighborhoods or whatever, then you end up with its own form of inequity. You know, I mean, the reality of this world is that there's always going to be some inequity. But when you set it up that way, you just promote it. And it's like, can we fix it? I'm not the person. I talk about it. I don't know what the answer is. I want them to fix it, but I don't know how. Oh my gosh. Good for you to be out there and fighting for it, because it needs to change. It really does 100%. Need to change. And unfortunately, what happens then is we end up with grants and asking for money from our taxpayers and doing these bonds and all of these things where the money is there. If they would level the playing field, it would be so much better. But here we are still, right?
Right, right.
So I know. All right. One last question. It's been a great, I knew it would be a great conversation. We both want the same things.
Same.
And it's so cool to be able to talk to somebody who's doing the work that needs to be done to help these kids, because that's your job and it's amazing. And I'm a person that doesn't shy away from any topic. We'll talk about whatever, you know, I'm not afraid of it. But I have this one question I always ask. And if you've listened to my podcast, you probably ought to know the question, and it can't be money. We've talked about money already. So if you could miraculously, and I say miraculously because I'm a Christian, I want God to just fix it. Right.
Sure.
But you can say magic wand too. I don't care, whatever. But, if you could miraculously fix one thing in your district that you have control of and never had to deal with it again, what would it be?
I would fix that our teachers and staff would not have to worry and hear about the assault on public education that is occurring at the federal level. Mm-hmm. I want our federal officials and state officials and whoever doesn't believe in us to come here and see what is happening in our school system, because right now, it is so hard to be an educator. And when I say educator district, I mean all the way from our school board to every single employee in our district and every single vendor and consultant that we have. I want our staff to not feel that attack and to feel how we appreciate on a national level the trajectory changing they're making. When I went into education 26 years ago, I was a first grade teacher. There wasn't an assault on public education. And it's very different now. And that hurts your soul.
Yeah. And you know, when, and I've said this before too, when we are judged based on one test score, that it doesn't work. You cannot. And that's why Brighter Together exists, right? Because we want to, and this is the platform in which Brighter Together has been created, is I'm really, really tired of the negative and the abuse and the negative things that are said constantly about education, because there is so much amazing work and amazing people that are that are coming to work every day, fighting the battle, working to make life better for our next generation, for their kids, for our kids, for everybody's children. And when you only, and talking heads get, and on both sides of the aisle, it drives me crazy. And I've turned off the TV because I get really mad. I was in the car the other day with my husband. And I was like, I'm putting headphones in because I'm not listening to that crap anymore. Because they just, Everybody thinks because they went to public school or went to school somewhere that they know the right answer. And they have been put in a position where they can talk to thousands and millions of people that they can say whatever the heck they want. And they're right. And they're not. And it makes me crazy. It really makes me crazy. So that's why I put my money where my mouth is for Brighter Together, because we educators, because we are together, because we are fighting that good fight, we are brighter together, and it matters. And so that's why the podcast exists, and that's why we have these amazing conversations. So thank you, Brenda. Thank you for coming on. Where do people come to learn more about you and about the amazing work that's being done at Fridley?
Yeah. Thank you so much. The best way to find me is on LinkedIn. Pretty easy to find me, Brenda Lewis, superintendent of Fridley Public Schools. Also, if you follow our social media, Fridley Schools, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Insta, and we are also on Facebook. Also, our website
website too. And I am happy and would be honored to dialogue with anyone. My email's on the website, and I would love to hear from your folks that are tuning in. This has been an absolute delight. And thank you, Jana. It's so wonderful when organizations such as yours want to feature the goodness that's happening right now.
Thanks. It's a pleasure. You are number 100, by the way.
Wow.
Congratulations. You're my 100th episode.
Too.
So, yay. Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you, Brenda. And have an amazing, it's only August right now, but this isn't going to air in August, but have an amazing school year. It's going to be
Thanks
great.
So one. Much. Thank you. Mm-hmm.